Okay. So I'll read the verse and we can repeat the translation after that. Text number 19. Yastva ihave sthena balat va hiranya ratnadini brahmanasya vyaparati anyasya vanapadi purushastam amrutam rajan yama purusha ayasyamsher agni pinire sandamse stvachi nishkushanti. Translation, please repeat. My dear king, a person who in the absence of an emergency robs a brahmana or indeed anyone else of his gems and gold is put in a hell known as Sandamsha. There his skin is torn and separated by red hot iron balls and tongs. In this way, his entire body is cut to pieces. Text number 20, translation. A woman or man who indulges in sexual intercourse with an unworthy member of the opposite sex is punished after death by the assistance of Yamaraja in a hell known as Tapta Surmi. There, such men and women are beaten with whips. The man is forced to embrace a red-hot iron form of a woman, and a woman is forced to embrace a similar form of a man. Such is the punishment for illicit sex. Purport. Generally, a man should not have sexual relations with any woman other than his wife. According to Vedic principles, the wife of another man is considered one's mother, and sexual relations are strictly forbidden with one's mother, sister, and daughter. If one indulges in illicit sexual relations with another man's wife, that activity is considered identical with having sex with one's mother. This act is most sinful. The same principle holds for a woman also. If she enjoys sex with a man other than her husband, the act is tantamount to having sexual relations with her father or son. Illicit sex life is always forbidden, and any man or woman who indulges in it is punished in the manner described in this verse. We'll also cover text 21. And a person who indulges in sex indiscriminately, even with animals, is taken after death to the hell known as Vajra Kantaka Shamali. In this hell, there is a silk cotton tree full of thorns as strong as thunderbolts. The agents of Yamaraj hang the sinful man on the tree and pull him down forcibly so that the thorns very severely tear his body. Purport. The sexual urge is so strong that sometimes a man indulges in sexual relations with a cow, or a woman indulges in a sexual relation with a dog. Such men and women are put into hell known as Vajra Kantaka Shamali. The Krishna consciousness movement forbids illicit sex from the description of these verses. We can understand what an extremely sinful act illicit sex is. Sometimes people disbelieve these descriptions of hell, but whether one believes or not, everything must be carried out by the law of nature, which no one can avoid. Like that. Then there's text 22 as well, only the translation. A person who is born into a responsible family, such as a kshatriya, a member of royalty, or a government servant, but who neglects to execute his prescribed duties according to religious principles, who thus becomes degraded, falls down at the time of death into a river of hell known as Vaitarani. This river, which is a moat surrounding hell, is full of ferocious aquatic animals. When a sinful man is thrown into the river Vaitarani, the aquatic animals are there immediately begin to eat him. But because of his extremely sinful life, he does not leave his body. He constantly remembers his sinful activities and suffers terribly in that river, which is full of stool, urine, pus, blood, hair, nails, bones, marrow, flesh, and fat. So after reading all these descriptions, we should clearly pray immediately. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshattarine. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So this is one of the most hope-giving chapters of Bhagavatam. And you may be wondering how and why. Because this is the chapter which we want to very quickly go through. Just the description that we just heard now may give nightmares to somebody who is very sensitive. So how is this hope-giving? Think about it. At least according to most people. What is the number one thing that divides the society today? What, according to most people, not you, but according to the popular opinion, what do you think is the number one aspect that divides the whole society today, which creates differences among people? Sorry? Male, female, okay, more. Religion. Everybody likes to blame religion. And why religion creates differences? Yes, Prabhu? Yeah. So why religion creates differences among people? Religion is saying, I don't think that's how people interpret religion. There is no responsibility. Nobody takes that part of the religion. Because each religion presents their own version of reality. Their own version of end goal. Their own version of what is right and what is wrong. Right? In fact, most people blame religion because it creates this kind of difference in worldviews, difference in systems of morality, right? That's why people, systems of worship, etc., etc. All this, so religion has always been blamed and as the reason for creating differences. And therefore, to really solve this problem of religious differences, you need to find a commonality among these religions. Guess what? One thing that is common to all religions, any religious follower, they will all be united on one aspect, the concept of hell. Hell can bring the whole world together, or the fear of it, because whichever religion you follow, there is a concept of hell. Right? So, we will try to explore that little bit before we go into why this chapter really is the hope-giving chapter. First is the joke part of it, but we'll also come to the serious part of it also, right? So if you see across world religions and different traditions, the concept of hell is something there everywhere. The flavors keep changing, but think about it. When I say visualize hell, which color comes to your mind? Black, dark, and some tinges of red. Why is it red? Blood, fire. Guess what? You ask this question to a person of any religion, the same answer will come. It is a dark place. There is fire. And maybe what kind of creatures? Some ghastly creatures, right? So this is a description in all world traditions. Guess what? We all are united in our goal to go to hell. So in for example, in many Abrahamic traditions, especially Christianity. Now, interestingly, one Christian scholar I was listening to, he was saying that in the Old Testament, hell as we understand today is hell is not a very popular concept. Hell in the Old Testament is very much described like almost like a state of limbo. Limbo means where like coma, nothing happening, no excitement, nothing. It's just a, you know, you are buried and you are just stuck there in this very deep, dark place. That's it. Right? But in New Testament, all these descriptions that you see, you know, there is Satan living there and all his agents are there. Different weird creatures are biting people, killing people, right? And there's one very famous Italian author, Dante Alighieri. He wrote this book called as a Divine Comedy, one of the greatest classics in the Western world, right? In that he talks about this kind of an allegorical, not allegorical, but in the story, he is the main protagonist and he is going through, it's actually a love story, but the character has to go through hell and then heaven and all those. But in the journey of hell, he gives description of hell. Why I'm quoting that? Because even in the, for example, in Christian tradition also, there's a concept of multiple layers of hell. So in that book, he talks about these 9 different circles. So they are like these 9 concentric circles. So imagine, visualize a funnel, right? With each layer of the funnel, the outer layer is wider. Then you go deeper, then there's a more inner layer, and finally it funnels down to the most, the central point. So this is how hell is described and talks about how in the outer layer is a state of limbo. Then you go down, then there is a circle of lust, there is a circle of gluttony, there is a circle of greed, wrath, heresy, violence, and in the deepest, the last circle, the 9th circle, the Mahapap, is treachery. When you betray a person, and there apparently Hades, the god of death, himself is personally there, and with his 3 heads, he's eating you. There he says in his journey he meets different, of course that whole, it's not a very Shastric thing, but for him it was more of a political commentary, that book, because that guy was little, he was a reformist. He didn't like the way church was operating at that point, and he, in fact, at some point he even says in one of the hells he sees one of the former popes, because that he was against the whole idea of selling the historic relics to it happened at certain point. So anyway, that's all another class. But it was like his political commentary. So in all these hells, wherever he sees different historical personalities. So in the last hell, he sees Brutus and Judas. You know, one treachery, because Judas cheated Christ and Brutus, he cheated Caesar. Like that. So like this, there's a discussion. But very much matches this whole concept of multiple layers of hells and different levels of suffering, and how even there is a gradation of sin. Likewise, even in Islamic tradition also, Jahannum, we know this word if you are grew up in India hearing Urdu, right? So the Jahannum is also something described like this. Even that is also a very fiery place. Of course, not all Jahannums are fiery. There are some icy cold hells also. But predominantly it's fiery places, and again there are and who goes there? If you are, all infidels go there by default, right? So that's the conception of hell in Islamic tradition. Even in Judaism also, again, it's again a post concept. It's not in the traditional Judaism, there's no concept of hell as such, but in the later on versions, apparently similar concepts like in the Christian concepts have been there. In Buddhism also, there are narakas. They also refer to as naraka, because we know Buddhism also is very strongly influenced by the Vedic thought process. They also have narakas, but there's a very important difference, because the Buddhism is a voidistic philosophy, in the ultimate sense everything is zero, all these narakas are also temporary states, right? Meaning, in the Vedic understanding, the place naraka is eternal, your suffering in that place is temporary. Unlike Abrahamic traditions where you are eternally damned to hell. Yes, guess what? Eternally you are there in hell, or eternally you will go to heaven. Right? But in Buddhist and in Vedic understanding, it's a temporary state. So Buddhism calls it temporary in a sense that place is temporary. Whereas in Vedic understanding, that loka is permanent, at least as long as the creation is there, but that loka is permanent, but your stay in that place is temporary. Right? So, so in Buddhist tradition also, there was one very famous book that became famous during the 70s. It's called the Tibetan Book of the Dead. So in that, there's very nice description of how hell. So for them, like I said, it's a temporary space, right? So which means there are some entities that come to you. They call them as the wrathful deities. So these are deities of wrath. So at the time of death, just like how I think one of the previous classes, one of the speakers spoke about the Garuda Puran description of the afterlife. So very similar description of afterlife comes there, where, but then across there it's 45 days. For us it is 13 days, but there it's a 45 day period. And each day there's a description of what the departed soul is going through. So around 8th or 9th day, these wrathful deities, they come out of you. Or you start experiencing them in your mind. So there, they say for somehow all these wrathful deities are female forms of deities. So there is Vrajreshwari, Raktamukhi, Simhamukhi, Kamalamukhi, Karmeshwari. So like this, they have so many such deities that come. And the external description of these deities is very much like how you would visualize Kali Devi in the Vedic tradition, right? With wearing a garland of skull, holding some weapons in your hand, right? And you go, and it is said that, and this is nice, this is the nice part about the description there. When you look at these messengers of hell or the wrathful deities, if you get overwhelmed by them, you get drawn towards them. So the whole idea of learning in their tradition, so when you are about to die, you prepare for death by offering prayers to all these deities, saying that, yes, I know you are there, but thank you very much. You know, like, I don't want to come near you. Right? Which I found very nice and inspiring, because if you think about it, attraction and aversion both entangle you in this material world. Even if you are averse to going to hell, you are investing your consciousness in hell in the form of aversion. Right? Does it make sense? Right? So the idea is, we neither want to be attached to heaven nor averse to hell. Which so much resonates with our Bhagavatam perspective, because we are not interested in, swarga, pavarga, narakeshu. We are neither attached to heaven, swarga, nor are we averse to hell. So this is the mindset a devotee needs to cultivate. So when we are reading these descriptions of the hellish planets, and if you think about it, Sukhdeva Goswami is preparing Parikshit Maharaj, because he is preparing him for afterlife. And in my previous class on this topic, we discussed how the entire description of the Vedic cosmology, the soul is going to visit all these places at the time of death. The transition of the soul from the material world to spiritual world, there is a route. If I am going from here to Chaupati, remember that example I gave, right? You have to go through, Borivali, you have to go to Mira Road, you have to go past the airport, you have to go past the sea link. So this route is fixed. It's just that when you're prepared with the root, you'll not get attached. So the previous description is all about don't get attached to the variety and the, what should I say, even out of curiosity, if you are thinking, oh, what is happening in Brahmaloka? Let me just check it out. Ta-da, you get stuck there in Brahmaloka. So while the previous chapters prepared us, don't get allured with the glamour of this material creation. This chapter is also preparing us, don't become averse to these hellish lokas. So that is why when we read descriptions of sometimes great kings like Janak Maharaj also went to hell, right? And you may be wondering, why, how can a devotee go to hell and all? But when they went there, it is not that they got overwhelmed with hell. They got overwhelmed with the monstrosity, the suffering, the pain that is happening there. So this is the hallmark of a devotee, that how you can be equipoised. Of course, for us, our equipoiseness comes from our very strong attraction to the Lord. In the Buddhist description that we were hearing earlier, their equipoiseness comes from complete detachment. So I am neither attached to this world, nor am I detached to this world, you know, or averse to this world. I am indifferent to this world. That's their approach. But so this, and if you see why Bhagavatam is describing this whole hellish planets, is it in any of these chapters, if you see this entire description in this chapter 26, are we anywhere seeing how to reduce your suffering in hell? In fact, the varieties of ways in which you will suffer is only what is being described. Right? In fact, and if you see, let's come specifically to our verses here. One is the nature of the suffering is a very, very long. Yesterday, Patsakas Prabhu's verse, in that he spoke about how this 800,000, 8 lakh miles was the depth of this, water, this body, this lake. And how many years he suffers? As many yojanas, 8 lakh years. And you'll be wondering, oh no, 8 lakh years. Imagine if somebody dies and has to suffer for 8 lakh years, they are stuck there. By the time they come back, the whole world will change, right? Well, no, it doesn't change. Because as you go lower in the lokas, your experience of time changes. Just like how one day of Swargaloka is one whole year on earth. Likewise, one moment on earth is lakhs of years on hell. So literally, the soul dies, is dragged to hell, suffers very long period in hell, and comes back almost very next moment on earth, and then his cycle continues wherever he needs to be reborn. Right? So that way, so don't worry, you are not missing out anything even if you go to hell. At least on earth, you are not missing out on anything. Right? But then we don't want to even go there. So then all these descriptions are given about the extremely horrific description of hot iron effigies that one's supposed to embrace, person being beaten up by whips, pulled up, made to climb a shimuli tree. And by the way, this is the shimuli tree, in case you are wondering. Right next to Patsaka Prabhu. So this is that Rakta Kantaka shimuli that we read about. This is that shimuli tree. So like this tree, in Western world also, it is called as the devil's tree. We also call it as a red cotton tree. If you see, Prabhupada also translated it as cotton silk cotton tree, he writes in text number 21. This is called as, technically it's called as a red cotton silk tree because it has this bright red flowers. It's also there right in front of Madan Mohan, if you notice. And in the month of April, you will see nice flowers coming out. And in the month of May, you will see those flowers. First, it has this green color bud that opens up to become a red flower. And that red flower will again turn into this kind of a dark brown color pod. And in the month of May, in the heat, that pod bursts open. And you will see this cotton kind of substance flying all over, right? So that's the cotton. So sometimes they collect this cotton and also make it, it's very silky, then it's the name cotton silk. They make low quality pillows also with that. But this is the Chimuli tree, the famous Chimuli tree from Narakaloka. But just to, we don't look at it as, Rakta Kantaka Chimuli. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would have ecstasy, his entire body would have goosebumps and he would look like this Chimuli tree. So if you visualize, look at the Chimuli tree, look how exaggerated these thorns are. So imagine the goosebumps as big as these thorns. So Kaviraj Goswami, when he describes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's body, he says that Mahaprabhu's body in ecstasy would look like a Chimuli tree. So I remember when first time His Grace Jananivas Prabhu and His Grace Pankajangir Prabhu, when they came to the Eco Village. So that time we had only one cottage, that 401 cottage, the last cottage on that hillock. So right next to that, when you're climbing up the staircase from where the security guy sits now, there is a Chimuli tree to the left side. So steps here, building there, here there's a Chimuli tree. So when Jananivas Prabhu heard that it's a Chimuli tree, he immediately went and embraced it. He said, I want to see how it feels like if you embrace Mahaprabhu when he's in his ecstatic state. Right? So devotees see not the Rakta Kantaka Chimuli, they see Mahaprabhu's ecstatic state, ecstatic bhavas here. Right? So like that. So yeah. So like this, but basically you read all this kind of hellish descriptions, but how do you access hell? How do you go to hell? I mean, we know how to go to hell, but literally, right? What does it mean to actually go to hell? Even from from the cosmological aspect also, we discussed how, like Bhagavatam, for example, it says, below the Patal Lokas and above Garbhodak Sagar is where the Narka Lokas are. And if you read Devi Bhagavatam or Devi Purana, it says, you have the 13 planetary systems, you have Naraka, and then you have Patala, and then you have Garbhodak Sagar. Or if you read Vishnu Puran, it says you have 14 planetary systems, Garbhodak Sagar, and deep in the Garbhodak Sagar is a whole terrain known as the Naraka Loka. So description is basically one thing they all are common is they are all down south. That's why Yamaraj also is the Adhipati for the Dakshina, the south direction, right? So, while all this, how do you actually go to hell? Do you go to hell in your physical body? No. Do you go to, so what do you carry with you when you go to hell? Does the soul go alone? No. What does it carry with it? Its subtle body is there. And there you are also awarded a special body. See, because the subtle body in itself cannot enjoy. Right? So you need, for something to interact with something, you need physical organs, you need some physical. So there is a different kind of body given. So pain is a phenomena that happens in the mind. But the trigger to pain has to come through an external means. So there, you are given a different kind of body, but that body is not made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. But that body is like mind, but it's not mind because it's still a layer grosser than the mind, and it is not any of earth, water, fire, air, ether also. So it's a different tattva in itself. That's why hellish planets, they are described, they are not part of the 14 planetary systems. Because anybody living in the 14 planetary systems, they need earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. But there it's a different equation altogether. So, but then, that hell is something that they, the hellish phenomena is something that they experience in their mind. The subtle body. Subtle body here means mind, right? And if you think about it, you experience hell even right now. When you go through some intense suffering, what you go through is hell, right? So hell is a physical location which can be accessed when you travel with your mental body. I repeat, hell is a physical location which you can access only when you travel through your mental body. Just like, for example, what is heaven is also in heavenly planets or even the higher planetary systems. As you go higher and higher, the grosser elements reduce. Like you lose the earth water. There in heavenly planets, it's mainly ether and air bodies that you see. When you even go past that, when you go to Jana, Maha, Tapa, especially if you go to Satyaloka, the highest planet, it's only the intelligence and ego is what the soul is covered with. As you keep coming lower and lower, in the earthly planet, you get all the elements. And likewise for the lower planetary systems also. But in hell, it is soul covered with its mind, intelligence and false ego and the special suffering body. A body that is designed in such a way because the physical bodies, it has a threshold of how much pain it can handle. Right? If the JCB falls on you, tada, Ram Naam Satya hai. But there in the hell, you will experience the full pain of JCB falling on you and you will not die. And the JCB will sit on you for some 10,000 years and then you will come back for the next JCB to again fall on you. So the body is designed to perpetuate suffering, right? And so then, while we understood that body also, what exactly takes us to hell? We are seeing all the sinful activities that we are seeing, you know, they are the ones that are taking Hare Krishna, they are taking us to hell. But where is that key to hell? All these experiences are stored in our mental body, in our mind. So our inability to process our mental experiences before the time of death, right? When we hear that life is an exam, you know, preparation, death is an examination, right? Death is a very, very important experience that the soul goes through, where it is given an opportunity to reset its experiences of life. And at that moment, when even modern science actually recently proved it, that at the time of death, when you hear your entire life flashes in front of you, so accidentally they put a person in an MRI scanning machine and person died, and then they were able to capture the last few seconds before a person died, and that the MRI scanning, it exactly matched the state of a person who's trying to recall something from the past. When you're feeling nostalgic, when you're recalling something from the past, how your brain would look like, exactly the same imagery they got when they captured the person. So the whole experiences, your entire life experiences you relive. But then what determines your next state of life? That state with which you are stuck with at the time of death. So that's why when they say, if you attend the Rath Yatra of Lord Jagannath and participate in the grandeur of Jagannath's Rath, it is so grand that your mind will be stuck in the Rath Yatra festival. So you will only go to Jagannath. You'll only go to Goloka. There's no other option, right? But for many people, there are a lot of unprocessed life experiences stuck in their head. Right? We all go through happiness and pain. As much as we try to process pain, most people don't even do that, but as much as we try to process pain, we also need to process happiness. Otherwise, because when I use the word happiness, I'm not talking about spiritual happiness, I'm talking about worldly happiness, sense gratificatory happiness. Because if your mind is stuck in that sense gratificatory happiness, like for example here, this person who's too much, who has given their mind a constant stimuli of happiness that is coming through illicit sexual relationships, at the time of death, their awareness gets stuck in that happiness, that illicit happiness. And that is the key to take them to the hellish plane. Right? Because whatever body you get, you have to go, whatever state of consciousness that you die with, you get the body accordingly. Right? But the problem is, if a person is too much indulging in sexual activity, illicit sex, then naturally their next life will be some animal like a pig or a whatever, something like that, you know. Now imagine tomorrow morning, like, again, we need to demystify death here. Death is just like walking from one room to another room. There is nothing enigmatic about death. It's like you sleep one morning and you wake up next morning. Death is just like that. It's just that you wake up with a big heavy headache and you wake up with seeing a younger body again and whatever. But still, it's almost as much as you sleep and you wake up next morning. But imagine you live a very sinful life. You are given an opportunity to live one whole life. In the time of death, you die with all these illicit pleasure memories. So naturally, law of nature says, oh, you want to enjoy so much of illicit relationships. But you know, human form is not meant for that. Don't worry, I will give you a new form. It is called the body of a pig, where you can have as much pleasure as you want. Right? Imagine you wake up suddenly tomorrow morning and discover yourself in a body of a pig. How will you feel? How confusing the whole experience will be. First, you should walk on four legs. Right? That itself, sometimes walking on two legs, we slip and we fall. Now you have to manage four legs. Right? Now you are thinking, oh, earlier, you know, left foot, right foot. Right? Now think, just think about it. How, which foot goes first? Should the four left leg goes first, or the hind left leg goes first, or what is the order in which I am supposed to walk? So you it will be like one. Imagine you are born as a caterpillar with 100 legs. Right? Just walking 1 centimeter will be a daunting task. And forget about so many other things that you have to accomplish in that body. Right? So, what do you think is needed, therefore, when you are awarded the next body, what do you think is needed? Loss of memory, very good. More than loss of memory, something else also is needed. Now imagine a place where there are varieties of bodies or varieties of opportunities to engage. But then you are suddenly moved from one place to another place without any training. How will you handle? That sounds like GEV departmental changes, but not like that. But literally, at the time of death, what is happening? The soul is now awarded a new body. But before it goes through a different kind of body, it needs an orientation. Hell gives you that orientation. If you have to become a pig, what does a pig do? Where does it? What does it have to do? It has to eat stool. Okay, then that body is taken to that loka, hellish loka, where they are put in a pit of stool. And for 10,000 years, who is being trained? What is being trained? Which part of you is being trained? Subtle body means the mind. You are given mental training. Eat stool, eat stool, eat stool, float in stool, float in stool, float in stool. Right? So to handle the encumbrance of this new material body, you are put through hell. So if you think about it, if there was no hell, rebirth would be an impossible task to handle. So now tell me, you think hell is good or bad? Do we need training programs? Yes. So now understand why hell is an act of compassion from Krishna's perspective. Because why did Krishna create this material world? Reformation, more than reformation, yes, of course, but the primary goal was to respect the free will of the jiva and says, okay, this is how you want to enjoy separately from me. Okay, here is this material world where you can be the master, you can be the controller, you can be the enjoyer, right? So this world in a sense was created to fulfill our desires. All the different forms of life that you see are the different kind of desires that the jiva has. When you look at a animal like a skunk or maybe a porcupine, you may be wondering what kind of a desire that soul must be having. Must be definitely fried out from other devotees. That's why now it's become like a porcupine. You know, no, nobody come near me. If you come, you will get stung. Right? So that every form of life is one to fulfill the specific desire of the jiva Krishna created, and more so to facilitate their transition into a new form of life, Krishna also created this training program. Right? So if you think about it, hell is a place where two things are happening. One, you are getting orientation for your new life, next life. Two, most importantly, you are burning out all your mental impressions. What you call as burning away of your karma, right? You need to exhaust all these mental impressions before you move on to the next life. Otherwise, just imagine, we all went through many painful experiences in life, right? Don't you feel sometimes it's a big burden to carry? What if you get an opportunity where you do a panchakarma of all those bad experiences, a mental panchakarma? Literally going through panchakarma is like going through hell actually. You have to drink that nasty ghee every day. You think ghee is good, no? But they put some medicine in that. And not just, and on empty stomach, you have to drink that ghee all day. You'll keep getting burps of that ghee. And then after your body is prepared, they give you this some kashayam, which makes you run to the bathroom every 5 minutes. Right? It's like hell. But your body is getting purged. Likewise, you need to go through hell to purge your mind. But is that the only way you can purge the mind? Is there any other way I can cleanse the mind? That's the link to the next chapter. After describing hell, Parikshit Maharaj, his question is, yeah, we understand it's an act of compassion. He's asking this. Or in other words, what Parikshit Maharaj is asking, is hell the only way to cleanse the mind? Or is there a more friendly way of cleansing the mind? Not so ghastly way. Yes, there is. By the power of the holy name. The four syllables, Narayana. Just one syllable is so powerful. Each syllable can destroy tons and tons of experiences of both pleasure and pain that we may have accumulated in our life. So, there is the easy way of cleansing the mind and there is the difficult way of cleansing the mind. So, as a informed reader of Bhagavatam, we have to now choose which path you will choose. So, see, again, everything in Bhagavatam is an act of compassion. Right? So, if you look at it from Bhagavatam perspective, even this hell actually is Krishna's way of compassion, saying, look, if you immediately go to the next body, you cannot move on. Better I reset your mind. Let's start with a new slate. So, he puts you through hell. So, that's the only way you forcibly you can cleanse your mind. But, that's not the only way. We can also cleanse the mind through taking shelter of the holy name, through acts like forgiveness, compassion, right? Sometimes many people find it difficult to forgive themselves. So you have left a very strong unprocessed impression in your mental body, right? When you cannot be compassionate towards others. So all these principles of right living are nothing but ways in which you can cleanse the impressions in your head and not create further impressions, both material positive and material negative. Both we need to get over, right? Otherwise, we have to go through this forced cleansing mechanism, right? Like that. Alright, so if we look at everything in this light, you will see even Krishna's love in hell. Like that. All right. So these are a few thoughts which I wanted to share. Are there any quick questions or comments anybody would like to ask? I think we have 3 minutes. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that we need a training before going to transmigrate into the new body. Is that true with the when the gradual evolution of jivas happen? Because they are also changing the body and every time they have to go to hell and then new body.
Right. Remember that day, I think in Madhumadhava Prabhu's class, he spoke about karma and dharma interrelationship. The rules of dharma apply. If there is a rule, a law, then the accountability is karma. So both dharma and karma are applicable for human beings. When there is no karma, then there is no suffering, no purging needed. Like animals, it's not that an animal is going to get attached. Animal, they are driven by their instinctual behavior. Their so-called attachment and aversion is a hardwired programming that is inbuilt into them. When the breeding season comes, they breed. Otherwise, they follow strict brahmacharya. Right? When the feeding time comes, they eat. Otherwise, they are like vairagis. So you see, like for example, lion, we think ferocity, oh, it is always killing. No. When the lion's stomach is full, even if deers are jumping in front of it, it will not even look at it. Right? They just follow the cycle of life. And it's not that the lion kills every day also. They usually kill one gazelle, one deer or something like that. And they eat and for 2 weeks they are happy. Because their body takes so much time to, you know, all. So it's not that the animals are all, but we human beings, if I eat one rasgulla, if I get one more, I will take, greed comes over. Or otherwise, I will store it for tomorrow. Right? So that behavior is purely that of human beings. So therefore, hell is also for humans. Right? So like that. So yeah, the other jivas, other living entities, they don't go through this cycle.
If they are also transmigrating, and how the point is, adaptability, how the adaptability will come. If the you are saying that the body.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I get the question. So let me correct my or the understanding that I got here. So earlier I understood that it's only human beings, but the transmigration is happening across species, right? It's not that only human beings are becoming. For example, from a lower species, even animals are elevating higher species. How is their training happening? So. In the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali mentions one very nice point that how the chitta, it has experiences. So there are conscious experiences and there are logged subconscious experiences. So the chitta is endowed with, so we all have experience of going through all the species of life, right? But certain experiences are logged within us because right now you need to function only as a human being. Certain other experiences are locked, right? So to unlock those experiences, so moment material nature gives you a particular body, those experiences, they come out. So in animals, it happens in a very natural way. Because they don't have attachment or aversion, the old experiences are immediately purged when they have to go to a new body. But we humans, we are so dumb, we hold on to those experiences of that humanly experience of that previous body. Therefore, to purge that and retrain and bring out those inner experiences, we have to go through these experiences of hellish life. Like that, yeah. But otherwise, in the chitta we have. So right now in our mind, in our subconscious space, I remember how I lived as a caterpillar, how I lived as a grasshopper, how I lived as a peacock or a pig or a bird or what. All those memories are there. But they are unlocked. They are all in a locked state. Like that. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Hey, Krishna. Are you Avas?
Yes.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for a very nice explanation of hellish planet and orientation in hell. Either we orientation hum there. My question is, in human form also, sometimes we have to take some decision or work. It seems that it is programmed. We are trying our best to control. But in devotional circle, we are trying, and in outside, they are not trying. They think that this is life. My question is, humans also work based on programs, or is there some freedom? Is there with someone, or I think that that freedom is not there with someone because they don't understand anything. So how can you explain it?
So that ability or inability of expression of our free will is defined by the gunas. That's a very simple explanation. Tamogun means very least ability to express. Rajogun means little ability. Sattva means full ability. So, because think of, imagine I have a pipe from here to you, and I'm trying to speak into that pipe and the sound comes to you. If the pipe is completely clear without any obstacles, so which means I am able to express myself, my consciousness being expressed purely, that is sattva. But imagine there are some blockages in that pipe. So my voice gets distorted by the time it comes to you. That is rajas, little blockages. Imagine there are a lot of blockages. I am speaking something, sometimes nothing comes out or very faint thing comes out. That is tamas. So from the spiritual space, from the soul space to the material space, that expression of consciousness triggered through intelligence, mind, prana, senses, this whole vibration that are happening from the soul vibration to material vibration, by the time it translates, there can be obstacles. The clarity in between is defined by the level of gunas that we have. So if a person is more influenced by tamas and rajas, they end up becoming programmed by their past impressions. So when we say that, you know, first time I steal something, innocent crime, but that stealing creates an impression. Next time I'll be little more courageous to steal. Third time, bindas, I'll just walk into the room and steal. Fourth time, I'm feeling bored. So what should I do to kill time? Let's steal. Now you see, stealing became a habit. So there, that person, when you said programming, right? So habits are that, the habit loops like this are the programming that we are creating for ourselves. So following spiritual discipline, which means at the action level, if you try to control, you are trying to purify the habit loop. Just like how bad habits are, we program ourselves with bad habits, we can also deprogram ourselves by inducing good habits. The classical example given of, you know, glass of water, if there is one pot of ink, how will you dilute the ink? You heard this one? If there is a glass of water and one drop of ink is there, how do you remove the ink out of the water? Keep adding more water, you dilute the ink. That is a positive habit loop. So when lot of Vedic literature talk about rules and regulations of life, right? The do's and the don'ts, they're talking about creating positive habit loops. That's how you dilute and come out of the bad programming. Or maybe you add something inside that water that will remove all the, you know, ink. So that is where you are going deep into the mental state. So that is how we work on when we're chanting mantras and doing some kind of activities that work on mind control. There you are going more into subtle levels. So we can come out of these programmed loops. But if people are not working on anything, then they are just continuing their past programming that will degenerate them more. They will go more and more spiraling down into hell. Right? So yes, we all have programs. And think about it. Sometimes, like I encountered a person once, and this person was also arguing that, don't you think even the spirituality is also kind of programming? Like, we are also being programmed to wake up early. We are also being programmed to eat sattvic food. We are also programmed to chant mantras. Isn't that also kind of programming? Well, yes, it is. But it is good programming. Because this programming is going to bring out the real nature of the soul. Right? Because ultimately, at least at our level, of course, from bhakti perspective, it's not applicable. But if you think about like good karma point of view, sattvic activities also will help in slowly removing the layers around the soul, and thereby you come bring out the pure light of the soul. right? So if you want to act in a completely free from programming mode, then that is, you know, Save Pumsham Paro Dharmo Yado Bhakti Radho Kshaje, that is that state. But because we are not in that state, we need something to remove the layers around the soul and bring out the pure love of the soul. So for that, yes, we need some kind of positive programming like that. Yeah, I don't know if I address your question, but the way I understood, I
explain.
Okay, jai. Okay, we'll end the class now. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavinda ki jai.